Today's episode of the Glass Half Empty podcast is brought to you by Kingsford Charcoal. Baseball season may be winding down, but there is no off season when it comes to firing up the grill. Stay stoked all year. And be sure to check out Kingsford's hilarious new video featuring the immortal Bartolo Colon on Twitter, at Kingsford.
Rogers in trouble. It's going to get there. He turned 32 yesterday. Does he have a vintage moment in it? In the end zone, it is caught for the win. Richard Rogers with a walk-off touchdown. A game ender for the Packers.
Welcome to the Glass Half Empty podcast on the Big Lead. I'm Ryan Glasspiegel. We are joined by Tim Kirkjian. Tim is going to be on the Baseball Tonight coverage of this evening's Rockies versus Cubs telecast on ESPN. Coverage begins at 6 p.m. Eastern time. So, Tim, I got to ask you this. It seems like literally you were put on this earth to do the job that you do, which is to cover, report on, analyze baseball for ESPN. If you didn't have this career path, what on earth would you be doing?
I don't have anything else to do in life. I think at everything else. I don't know anything about anything else. This is the only language we spoke in my house growing up was baseball. My dad was a really good player. And he had a better feel for the game than just about anyone I've ever met. My two brothers are in the Baseball Hall of Fame at Catholic University. And this is what I feel like, as corny as it sounds, I was destined to do. I went to Walter Johnson High School in Bethesda, Maryland, named after the greatest pitcher of all time. And I've often asked myself, if I wasn't doing what I'm doing, what would I do? And the answer is, I'm not trained to do anything else. I don't really love anything else other than my family, of course, and basketball. So this is something I think I was always meant to do, and I'm so glad at age 61 that I'm still doing it.
So I'm a Brewers fan, and I don't think anybody could say that they were surprised by the Brewers beating the Cubs yesterday, but what I was very surprised by was the extent to which the Brewers fans hijacked the volume at Wrigley Field. Going into Monday, could you have ever foreseen kind of 20% of the audience being Brewers fans and out-noising the Cubs fans in their own building?
Yeah, I did the game yesterday from the booth, so I got a really good look at it. And yes, I was surprised how many Brewer fans there were. When Mike Moustakas got a hit, you could clearly hear people yelling Moose from end to end, and that was impressive. Now, Cub fans are great. Cub fans were still way in control of that game yesterday. But all this reminds us of, again, is how great the Brewer fans are. Miller Park, even when that team was losing, was usually close to being filled and really a raucous place to play. And I think this is one of the great untold stories in baseball over the last few years, how well Milwaukee has really supported that team, win or lose. And now that this team is not only winning, but is really fun to watch, I can't wait to see what Miller Park's going to be like during the postseason, because I've been there for the postseason before, and it was crazy, and it's going to get crazier because this Brewer team has a real chance to get to the World Series.
We've got the Rockies and Cubs on tap tonight on ESPN. Baseball is a bit of a regional sport in the sense that a lot of fans are very intimately glued to their own team. Now, I think the Cubs transcend that. They won the World Series. They've been in the playoffs a bunch of years in a row. And I think a lot of even casual baseball fans know their players, know Joe Maddon, know their story. If people are going into tonight's game fresh on the Rockies, what are two or three things that you think that the casual fan should really know about them?
Well, number one, Kyle Freeland is pitching tonight for the Rockies, and he is really good. In another season, one without Aaron Nola, Max Scherzer, and Jacob deGrom, Kyle Freeland would win a Cy Young Award with the season he had. That's how good he is. The only danger is he's pitching on short rest, and that's going to make it pretty tricky for him. But other than him, you got to remember how dynamic that left side of the infield is with Trevor Story, their shortstop, who is an MVP candidate, as is third baseman Nolan Arenado. And everyone in baseball has known for 5 years how great Arenado is. But every time he plays in a postseason game or gets any national exposure, it's even more obvious how great a player that guy is. And with the way Charlie Blackmon has swung the bat lately, to have those three guys in the same order at the same time, it doesn't matter if you're playing in Colorado or Chicago or anywhere, that team can really do some damage. Plus, they've won 9 out of 11 going into the postseason. They've played exceptionally well, and you should not discount what the Rockies can do, whether they're home or away.
And then, so that sounds like you almost think that the Rockies are going to win tonight. Is that, am I correct in that sense, or am I incorrect?
Well, first off, I have no idea who's going to win tonight, which is the greatest part, as always, about baseball. But I think the Cubs are going to win tonight because of John Lester. John Lester is one of the best big game pitchers active in the big leagues today. He's made, this will be his 22nd postseason start. He's pitched clinchers. He's pitched in relief. He's done a whole lot of good things and has an ERA for his career under 3 in the postseason. He is absolutely the perfect guy for this job. And he had a great September, and he had one good start, the only start against the Rockies this year. And I think he's the perfect guy to pitch on full rest for the Cubs. So I give the Cubs an edge tonight with the understanding that this is a baseball game and anything can happen tonight.
Do you think that Joe Maddon uses Cole Hamels in relief tonight?
I think Joe Maddon will have to do whatever it takes to advance, because when you're the Cubs and you win 95 regular season games and you won the World Series 2 years ago and you're no longer just the lovable Cubbies, you have expectations every day now to win, which is great. That's the way it's supposed to be. I think Joe Maddon will look at this game tonight and say, all hands on deck, we have to advance. Now, he doesn't want to pitch Cole Hamels tonight unless he has to, but we got a good look at that bullpen yesterday, and that's the big difference for me between the Brewers and the Cubs, is the depth of the bullpen. Milwaukee's bullpen is terrific, with tremendous length to it. The Cubs do not have that bullpen, and if they have to use a starter, they will. But Joe Maddon also knows, if I'm going to win the World Series this year, I'm going to need Cole Hamels as a starter as many times as I can use him.
I want to switch over to a little bit to talking about your personal career journey. This year is your 20th anniversary at ESPN, and it's also one that you spent a little bit reinventing yourself. You were in the booth as an analyst more games than you worked as a sideline reporter for ESPN. Can you tell me a little bit about making that transition from reporter to analyst?
Well, I always feel like I've been an analyst for the last 20 years also, but being in the booth has changed my job description. And yes, I'm more of an analyst than I am a reporter now, although with my reporting background as a newspaper guy, I will always be a reporter. But it has been so much fun the last 3 years, actually, being in the booth, because I get to weigh in on something right away. When a play happens, I get to talk about it right now. And the best part about being in the booth is I'm sitting right next to a major league player. In this case, yesterday, Eduardo Perez, one of my great teammates. And whenever I'm not sure about something, or whenever we really need to defer to someone who played in the big leagues, Eduardo is right there. So I routinely ask him, what happened on that play? What do you do here? Do you bunt? Do you hit and run? Do you intentionally walk this guy? I like to think I know the answers to these questions, at least some of them, but I'm going to defer every time to the big leaguer sitting next to me, and that's what makes the booth job so much fun. A, Carl Ravitch is the best point guard there is as far as play-by-play guys go, and Eduardo is the absolute perfect guy to look to and say, tell us what happened there or what should happen next.
You wrote for Sports Illustrated for 8 years before you got to ESPN. And this is kind of a weird question, but I feel like at some point during the tenure you were there from 89 to 97, I think at the beginning, SI might have been a bigger sports media outlet than ESPN. Did you observe kind of ESPN passing SI in that proverbial horse race during that time? Or do you think that might have happened a little bit sooner before you got there?
Well, it's a really interesting question, because when we worked at SI, instead of competing against newspapers or other magazines, our bosses used to say our competition is ESPN. That's our competition, because they're going to have stuff before we get it, because they're on every single day with seven shows per week. And I think they were absolutely right about that. But I just think that with all, you know, all online and television shows now, they have passed the written word in a way, in that it's so immediate now. And the whole world is so immediate that it is difficult to catch up when you're only coming out once a week like SI or any other magazine. I could tell you SI days were the proudest days of my whole life, given the amount of work it took to do a good job at that place and the level of expertise and perfection at that place. But in the end, the people that are writing every day for tomorrow morning or for right now, that's how the world works in today's media. And I don't think there's a way around that.
But would you agree that in like 1989, SI is bigger than ESPN, or do you disagree with that?
Well, SI was certainly more powerful than any publication at the time, because when you got a cover story for Sports Illustrated in the mid-80s, or even when I got there in 1990, that was a huge deal. But with the way the media has changed, it's just not the same anymore, because the players have their own Twitter accounts. They have their own writing outlets. There's all sorts of places to go. And again, I just think ESPN and all the other television outlets and all the other dot-coms that can give you stuff right away, it has just left some magazines behind. And again, I'm not real happy about that, but that's the way it works.
What was your first SI cover story?
I wrote something in 1990, I believe it was, on the Red Sox, how they got really hot and were going to take over. And that was my first cover, I think. I'm not even positive. I did a bunch of them, but mainly because they sent me to the hottest team in town. And I did some covers later, several on Cal Ripken, which really made me happy, because that was, I thought that was really rewarding work to do that, especially when he broke Lou Gehrig's record. But yeah, SI days were a treasure to me, believe me.
So I read that from 1990 till 2010, you cut out literally every MLB box score out of a newspaper and taped them into spiral notebooks, but stopped because newspapers stopped printing box scores. If newspapers have been printing them for perpetuity, do you think that you would have done this every day of the baseball season for the rest of your life?
Yes. I mean, I really felt like having the box scores in my box score book, which I took everywhere that I went on every trip, was invaluable to me. And again, I'm an old guy now, but I still like having something in my hand, something tangible. And I always felt like if I took a long trip, you know, D.C. to L.A., I would have 5 hours, 6 hours where I could sit and look at box scores. So if I was going to see, say, the Padres, who I hadn't seen in a while, and I had 3,000 miles, I could go through every box score. And if you read those things properly and correctly and know what you're looking at, you can really learn an awful lot from the box scores. Hey, this is how they use their bullpen. This is what they do in late innings. So, yes, I only quit because the time it took to find all the box scores that didn't make my morning paper on the East Coast, it just became overwhelming to me. So I had to quit after 20 years. I wish I hadn't, but there was no choice.
When you take notes now, are you doing it physically by hand in a notebook, or are you taking notes electronically via like phone or tablet or laptop these days?
Both. I still do a day-by-day book, which is not my box score book. A day-by-day book is I write down by hand every score of every game for every day. So I have a Yankees page, a Red Sox page. I got a page for all 30 teams. I keep track of about 100 pitchers. And I just feel like, as an old guy who's terrible with technology, that I absorb it better, I see it better when I actually write it down with my own two hands. So when I write in there that the Red Sox played last night, here was the score, here was the winning pitcher, here's their record, here's their standings, I like to feel when I do that every morning that I've got at least a handle on what happened the night before, and that gives me a good feeling going into the next day that I'm prepared because I did my day-by-day book from the night before.
I know you have a hard out, so I want to get you out of here on this. You're a frequent guest on the Dan Le Batard show with Stu Gotts, and one of the things that they do with you is they play the looks like game where they read this person looks like, and then they name kind of a stock character from the real world. I'm going to turn the tables and I'm going to do it to Dan and Stu reading them about you. So Dan Le Batard looks like a guy who takes his family on vacation to Colorado to go skiing, but spends the whole week in the lodge because he went on vacation to relax and not exert himself.
That's not bad. And if I may, those lookalikes on the Le Batard show make me laugh so hard, but not because I'm an idiot. It's because those are so beautifully written and so cleverly done. There's no way around it. That stuff is absolutely tremendous. And I like the way you went after the Le Batard one. That's pretty good. Nobody's better than the guys who submit those. And by the way, those lookalikes are not done by the guys on the show. They are done by people outside the show, like regular people who just want to contribute to the show. And that's what makes it even better. But the Le Batard one is pretty good. I can't see him going down the side of a mountain on a pair of skis.
And then Stu Gotts looks like a guy who buys a new grill every summer because he doesn't want to clean out the charcoal.
That's pretty good. Yes, I don't pretend to know Stu Gotts as well as I know Dan. I've known Dan for 30 years, giving our writing backgrounds, but I could see Stu Gotts saying, I'm not cleaning that up. Let's just go get another grill. That's pretty good, too. If you wrote those, kudos to you.
All right. Thank you so much, Tim. Appreciate the time. Enjoy these MLB playoffs. Everybody who sees you on TV, that your zest shines through the screen. And I think I speak for all of my listeners when I say that we greatly appreciate it. So thank you for making the time for us during your particularly busy stretch. And we look forward to seeing you on ESPN over the next month and beyond.
Well, thank you so much. I enjoyed it very much.
All right. Bye, Tim.
Bye-bye.
such stern strangers.